when there's a pastor, he's the only one who can speak. And it's an honor to be able to do this. So thank you, Doug. This morning, I want to talk about what stories we are writing with our lives and the power of what a story can do. And we have to really pay attention to what we are doing. And we're going to examine a few things this morning that's going to help us navigate what we are doing with our lives. Right now, we are writing the history books of the future. We are writing the current of where our culture, where everything is headed right now with the way that we are living our lives. So right now, as we see our country in turmoil, as we see all these things shifting and changing, there is one constant that we have to drive into this culture if we want to see change, and that is the story of our lives through Jesus Christ. Amen. So this morning, we're going to look into that here. The church is writing the playbook also of the future. The church is right now setting the stage and the foundation of the future of what this country will see and view us Christians like. So we have to be very careful of how we walk, talk, and teach. What spiritual message are our lives writing right now? I think that is going to be the overreaching question today that I want you guys to examine in your own hearts as this message goes on through these four examples that we're going to go through. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 3. The version that I will be reading this morning is going to be probably a little bit different from what you have in front of you. I'll be reading this passage out of the Message Bible, but it still will get the same understanding through everything you have in front of you. It's always good to hear those pages rustling. Does it sound like we're always putting ourselves on the back and patting ourselves on the back, insisting on our credentials, asserting our authority? Well, we are not. Neither do we need letters of endorsement, either to you or from you. You yourselves are the endorsement we need. Your very lives are the letter that anyone can read just by looking at you. Christ himself wrote it, not with ink, but with God's living spirit, not chiseled into stone, but carved into human lives, and we publish it. We couldn't be more sure of ourselves in this, that you, written by Christ himself for God, are our letters of recommendation. We wouldn't think of writing this letter about ourselves. Only God can write such a letter. His letter authorizes us to carry out new plans of action. His plan wasn't written out with ink on paper, with pages and pages of legal footnotes that would kill your spirit, but it is written with spirit, on spirit, with his life on our lives. Just think about that for a moment. In that passage, you look at that, we are the living letter of God to everyone around us. We're not just people going through the everyday mundane times of our lives. We are a living, moving, breathing representation of who Jesus is. How's your season going of life right now? How's your writing? What kind of things are you writing into your story right now? Who has control of the pen? The four letters that we're going to look at this morning are segments of stories as examples, but we're going to start this morning. Jonah. Jonah's journals is what I labeled this. Jonah had an assignment from God, and I think when we search our hearts, we all have an assignment. We all have a purpose. We all have a gift and a calling. And Jonah's story could have been completely different. But Jonah was fearful and he ran in the opposite direction of where God called him to go. And I'll tell you right now, there is no way that you can outrun Almighty God. And I'm so thankful for that, because the very same passion that he pursues us with for us to do his will is the same passion that he goes after us to love on us, to claim us as his son or daughter. At some point, though, we will be made to face God. And in this season, it's really interesting how coronavirus has done some things that are very hard for a lot of us. A lot of us are not used to being isolated or kept in quarantine or separated from other people and having to put our plans on hold. But that has also caused us to face a lot of the things that we would have worked or done other tasks or been out with our friends, and we would have distracted ourselves and would not have faced them. So now we are presented with a time that we have to face the problems that are in front of us. God will help you rewrite your story if you're in a situation that you're running from him. And that is just the ultimate overreaching story of Jonah. And I can say from experience that I have been Jonah. I have had callings placed on my life, things that I've been told to go and do, and I have run in the opposite direction. But God pursues me and always brings me back. And the interesting thing is I think that we need to be aware of Jonah's story. In the Bible, it talks and says that Jonah actually did not like Nineveh. That's the reason why he ran. He didn't feel that Nineveh deserved the salvation of God. And in this season and of the unrest of the culture that we're looking at with all the race stuff back and forth, if you look at that, Jonah was prejudiced toward Nineveh. He didn't want them to be saved. He ran away from his calling. And I wonder this morning if there are some things in our lives that we have prejudged, that people are a lost cause, that maybe those things need to be revisited. Jonah had to face God and his opinion of who God sent him to. He had to face himself. I think we overlook that in the story of Jonah, is that he had to look at himself and realize that he was running from God, that he had something in his heart that was keeping him from his calling. So is there something that you can look at in your own life this morning and say, maybe this is the thing that's keeping me from doing what God has called me to do? Jonah's story could have been a story of rebellion and death. Instead, God turned his story into salvation for an entire city. The story of Jonah and the big fish, everybody, I think whenever I was growing up, the fish was kind of like a punishment. But I don't see it that way anymore. Now that I've read this story multiple times, there's one thing that just pops out at me so big in this, that sometimes what we see as God's punishment is actually his provision for us to make a way to go do his will. So we're going to turn to Jonah 2, verses 1 through 2. This morning I hope that we can look at the isolation and things that we've been through and change our perspective from a place where it looks like it's a punishment to look at it as a place for perspective change, for an opportunity rather than a punishment. Then Jonah prayed to his God from the belly of the fish. He prayed in trouble, in deep trouble. I prayed to God and he answered me. From the belly of the grave I cried, help. And you heard my cry. You threw me into the ocean depths, into a watery grave with ocean waves all around me, ocean breakers crashing over me. I said, I have been thrown away, thrown out of your sight. I will never again lay eyes on your holy temple. The ocean gripped me, the bottom of the sea where the mountains take root. I was as far down as the body can go, and the gates were slamming shut behind me forever. And you pulled me up from the grave alive. Oh God, my God, when my life was slipping away, I remembered God, and my prayer got through to you, made it all the way to your holy temple. Those who worship hollow gods, God frauds, walk away from their true love. But I'm worshiping you, God, calling out to you in thanksgiving, and I'll do what I promised I'd do. Salvation belongs to God. It was in this moment that he was spit out of the fish. It was when he dropped the prejudice of Nineveh. It was when he said, I'm done with my opinion, and I'm taking your opinion, God. Sometimes we're in a place where we don't think that we can cry out to God, and we're being crushed from all sides. And finally, when we're at our wit's end, even though it should be our first priority, we wait until the very, very end. But it's our time right now to cry out to the Lord. In the moment of surrender, he wrote the legacy letter for Nineveh completely different. The outcome was completely different. The result of him turning from his own opinion was a salvation for an entire generation of people. People are looking for hope in this time, and we are to be the hope of the world. Leesville Faith Community Chapel is to be the hope of the world. The next letter we're going to look at this morning is Paul. And Paul, I don't know how he was able to write all that he wrote, and the majority of it was written while he was in prison. Just to think of that is just baffling. And when you look at the scriptures that were written in that time, it just blows your mind. How could you have that mindset? How could you have that peace in that moment? It's because of who he was clinging to. We can look at the isolation and containment as a promise killer or the promise fulfiller. The thing is, our circumstances should not be able to stop the will of God. We are the only ones who can let that happen. We have to remember who we are clinging to. We have to remember where our hope comes from. Paul had been stoned, persecuted, and imprisoned. It doesn't really sound like a place where you could leave a legacy. It sounds like it's pretty much over, but not for Paul. We're going to turn to Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Do not fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. Before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything comes together for good, will come and it will settle you down. It is wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. I just think it's incredible that we have a God who will take our petitions, who will hear us, and that his name is the Prince of Peace. So how can you have that peace in that situation? Being imprisoned after being stoned and beaten numerous times. Tons of things have happened to Paul at this point. It's only through the peace and the presence of God. So don't let your containment and isolation become a promise killer. Make it a promise fulfiller. Philippians 4 again, verse 11 through 13. In the Message Bible again. I rejoice in God. I am glad in God. For far happier than you would ever guess. Happy that you're again showing such strong concern for me. Not that you ever quit praying and thinking about me. You just had no chance to show it. Actually, I don't have a sense of needing anything personally. I've learned now to be quite content, whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as I am with much. As much as I am with little. I've found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hand full or hand empty. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. Just looking at the story of Paul, I can tell you that my letters probably would have struggled to remain joyful in the Lord. But yet again, this is just a message about transparency. This is about where are we at. So I can definitely say that would have been a struggle for me. But Paul wasn't focused on the circumstances or the current pain he was in. He was focused on what was to come. He was focused on what the promise was, that Jesus was coming again, and that the church needed that message to go out. Don't look at your current circumstances, but look at the good promises of God has lying ahead of you. Paul was aware people would be reading possibly these letters for generations, as long as the church was able to keep them and survive. So this morning, I want you to keep in mind that we need to write our stories with the mindset of the future. Don't get hung up on what is happening now, but look to God. Look to what He has for you. Write the story that when people read it, they will see the joy of the Lord and salvation. So again, are we writing that letter this morning with our lives? When you go to work, when you face trouble and turmoil, are you still writing that same letter? Who has control of the pen? The next example is going to be Caleb. And this passage is found in Joshua 14. This is a very familiar story, though. This is the story of the spies who went into the promised land. We're going to start in verse 7. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land, and I brought him back a report according to my convictions. But my fellow Israelites who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt in fear. I, however, followed the Lord wholeheartedly. So on that day, Moses swore to me, the land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord wholeheartedly. You guys know the story pretty well, I'm sure. But Caleb was one of the 12 spies to enter the promised land. Moses selected them, and God had already promised them the land. He had already told the Israelites, you just have to go in and possess it. It is yours. But the thing is, when God says something, we have to carry it out. And who are you going to believe? Will you believe the 10 that are crying out that the land is too dangerous, that there are giants there? The mindset of the other 10 spies was that they looked at the problem and not the promise. So, again this morning, are you looking at something in your life as a problem when God has already promised it to you? Are you allowing that to keep you from your promised land this morning? Caleb and Joshua refused to go along with the other 10. Those other 10 people were not looking and writing a legacy story. They were writing with their emotions, and they were writing with fear. And a lot of times whenever fear gets involved, it tends to get blown out of proportion. The report tends to be exaggerated and over and above what God has promised. They try to make it seem insurmountable. They try to make it seem impossible. But if we know God, that's exactly where He strives, where He is able to move and thrive and show us who He is. But they made all kinds of excuses. We saw the descendants of Anak, which would have been people like Goliath. They were people of giant-like stature. So there were those things. They spread rumors among the people so that they would start bickering amongst each other in fear. They let fear spread throughout the entire Israelite camp. So they spread a narrative. They spread a story. Numbers 13:26. I'll just skim over this a little bit. But that's just the passage that says that the land does flow with milk and honey. So they saw the good things, but then they started making their excuses. But we see the descendants of Anak. And then they ended up saying that people were being swallowed up by the land in verse 32. They spread a negative narrative. I don't know if you guys know anything about early childhood education, but I'm blessed with having a wife who does know quite a bit. And she has her bachelor's in that. So one thing I've learned from her is that it takes seven positive affirmations to make up for one negative affirmation in a child. So let's just think about that for a minute. If you're letting fear rule your life, every time something negative comes in, it takes seven positive things to correct the thinking back to where it should be. So what is it that's screaming in your mind right now? What is it that's so loud right now going on in your mind? Are you allowing the voice of God to overreach the whispers of the devil, or is the devil screaming in your face and you're barely hearing the whisper of God? Does your legacy letter need to have an editor to edit out the negative thoughts that you have toward yourself and toward others? And this is what Caleb tried to do for Israel. He tries to stop the negative spies in their tracks. And he says, no, we can do this. We can go and possess the land. It is ours. The Lord has promised it to us. But unfortunately, this story ends with Israel not listening. But if you look at that passage in Joshua, God's promise was fulfilled for Caleb, though, because he clung to God. Let's speak the promise and not the problems. I think a lot of times we do get hung up on that. We tend to try to solve the problems on our own, and we just talk about the problems over and over and over again. But when really we should be just talking about the promise. If we cling to the promises, the problems don't matter, because our God is greater than the problems that we're going to face. Our last letter that we're going to examine today is Daniel. Daniel in the lion's den. The book of Daniel starts with four characters at the very beginning. Those four characters is going to be Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So you already probably know the whole cast, but it's interesting because I think a lot of times it's hard whenever people who are in authority over you don't follow after God too. And I think we make excuses a lot of times saying, well, my workplace is just so hard to work in. Trust me, I'm not preaching at you guys. I'm preaching at myself up here this morning. So, but you cannot let what God has told you be changed by the people surrounding you. Daniel's name was changed, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those were their Babylonian names. I don't know if you know that. Their actual names were Azariah, Hananiah, and Mishael. So right off the bat, you see this conflict where they have come in and they've taken over Israel and they've taken all these slaves out. Now they're in exile in Babylon. Okay? So they're being ruled over by an ungodly king. But Daniel is a man of God, and he refuses to worship the king as a god. He refuses to worship those idols. And Daniel continues to do what Daniel had done all along, and it made the rulers and the leaders of that country go nuts, absolutely berserk. Daniel prayed three times a day, and he refused to change that circumstance, and that is what got him thrown into the lion's den. So this morning, I want you to realize that someday, probably soon, we're going to face troubles for doing the very thing that we should be doing. For the very mundane pursuit of our relationship with God, those things will get us in trouble. But our God is greater than those troubles that are going to come. The name that they gave him, the name that they gave Daniel, Belshazzar, meant the hidden treasures of Baal. But Daniel's real name means that God has counted, God has judged, God has decided. In short, it is finished. It has already been done. It is already decided. My God is my God, and that will never change. Daniel held true to that. And this morning, I pray that we are living a life that people are seeing that in us. Don't let fear grip you or change your mind or change who you are in God. Daniel was an old man when he went to the lion's den. He was not some young kid. His life was probably coming to closer to an end than it was at a beginning. But no lion is a match for God when he is faced with the presence of God. Maybe you're facing a circumstance that makes it look like the end. Maybe you're facing a circumstance that you don't think you can get out of, or and you haven't put yourself there. That's another part of this, is that you notice that all of these people, whether it be Caleb, whether it be Paul, all of them were just clinging to God. And it took Jonah repenting to get to that place, but ultimately, their story is a story of, I didn't put myself here. God will be with you if you pursue him. But you might be facing a job loss, your marriage might be on the rocks, depression. Don't buy into the intimidation of the enemy. I want you to see the overreaching, interesting change that takes place in the king. The king who put Daniel into the lion's den was not the king who he was after he pulled Daniel out of the lion's den. In Daniel 6:23 through 27, this is the change that takes place, and this is the change that people will have when we are living out our legacy letters before God, when we're living God's life through our lives. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to take Daniel out of the den. When Daniel was brought up from the den, he was found to be unharmed, for he trusted in his God. The king then gave the command, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and thrown into the lion's den. They and their children and their wives, they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all of their bones. The king Darius wrote to those of every people, every nation, and every language who live on the whole earth, may you prosper and abound. It is a decree that in all my royal dominion, people must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. That's starting to sound like a huge change. It goes on though. This is what happens when we live the lives that God has called us to. When people see it from the outside and their hearts get changed, people must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his dominion has no end. He rescues and delivers. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth, for he has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. When we go through a storm and we cling to God, he makes us unshakable. It's not something that we do. It's not something that we can receive glory for. It is solely God who does that. It doesn't make sense to people on the outside who don't know God. And God can be the only explanation, because we in our human abilities are no match for the troubles of this world or the enemy. By ourselves, we can't do it. Who knows what the world will say about us in future generations? What direction are we giving them? What foundations are we giving them to build on? What are we as a church giving the pen that writes our story? What will be said about Leesville Faith Community Chapel? Are we giving into our frustration, or are we giving into our faith? Are we giving into panic, or are we trusting in the power and God? Every day we write our story. And I think the challenge is, what will those around you contribute to your story? What will they say about the life that you have led? The examples that we've read this morning, they were just following after God. What are we writing in our story? Who has control of the pen? Because if you're giving into fear, you're giving the pen to the enemy. If you're shutting out the voice of God, you have the pen in your own hands. If you're trusting and relying in God, then His life is being manifested in your life, and He is writing your story. Who has the pen? And what story is being written? What example of Christ are you bringing to the world? Let's pray.